Rules.
We're back.
We're back.
And we're meeting somebody again. And of course, we've got plenty more of these to come. Some of the ones we've done before with Super Agent Giovanni Branchini, with Victor Montagliani, the CONCACAF president, FIFA vice president, Gael Clichy, your old buddy, former Arsenal and City. But this one's a bit different.
It is a
This
bit
one's
different.
An interesting one.
A very interesting one.
So who are you and why are we talking to you?
I'm Sami Khedira. I'm German. I retired 6 months from the professional football. Maybe I can tell some nice stories about my career and maybe about my future and about the current football situation.
I think you left out a couple things, which is interesting about humility, Jules.
Yeah, like, I love that.
Most people would have said,
I'm a World Cup champion.
I'm a World Cup champion. And a few months before winning the World Cup, I won the Champions League. And it was La Decima for the biggest club in the world. But never mind that.
Where are your medals? Is the medals and the replica trophies still on the shelf in the house? Or?
I don't know. You have to ask my brother. So this is my brother who's doing like my management. He had all the medals and the trophies. And my dad is taking care about the shirts. So
some fans
are, can I get a shirt? It's I don't know where they are. You have to ask my dad. So he's like the kid man, you know, the kid man of the Khedira house.
For people who don't know, your father's Tunisian, your mother is German, you were born in Stuttgart, which is in southern Germany. You grew up with Stuttgart from a very young age. And then you start the season playing in the Regionalliga, which I think was like the third or fourth division at the time. And then that same season, you move up onto the first team and Stuttgart win the Bundesliga. Now, were you thinking...
Good influence, right?
I think the key is there.
I want to be clear on this. This isn't one of those situations where the young kid comes in, plays two or three games. I think you made 22 appearances that year. You were an important part of that team that won the Bundesliga. Were you thinking, oh my God, this is fantastic. My new career, top flight German football?
It's like absolutely Cinderella story. But the story is a bit longer. The year before, I had problems with my knee. And like the doctor said, no, you can keep going, keep going, keep going. And then we found out that I have the meniscus. It's like broken. So we fixed it. But after 10 weeks, I restarted. But it's not getting better. So they said like, we cannot have a surgery. You are 17 years old. We cannot do it. So I find Müller Wohlfahrt. I think he's a really famous doctor from Munich. Uli Bönisch, he's in Augsburg and he's one of the best knee specialists in the world. So they fix it, but I need like 4 to 5 months for the recovery. So I came back and Stuttgart told me like, go on the second team and recover well. And after 2 months, I was there. I was there in really good performance and a good shape. So I moved up to the first team and what you said, it's unbelievable. So we said, like, maybe we can go to the Europa League, or it was like UEFA Cup, or maybe Champions League. And at the end, we won it. But unfortunately, we lost the cup final. So this is one of the trophies.
You could have done the double.
Yeah.
Did you know when you were 14, 15 that you were going to make it? Where there's a lot of talk about, we've got this kid at Stuttgart Academy, Khedira is going to be really good. Or were you still... kind of same level to people academy, or were you already above?
Yeah, I had my teammates, some of them were maybe better technically, but if you would like to have the step from the kids game to the adult game, to the real game, you need also mentality.
Yeah,
that's the main key. So if you are talented but you have no mentality, you don't get it.
Well, I ask this to every
I love that question coming. He loves the question.
I do. Okay, and you have to answer as honestly as you can. What age were you when you looked around to your team and you said, okay, that guy's better than me? In other words, what age were you not the best player on your team?
Like on the national team, like under 15, under 16.
Really?
Okay. I played with Kevin Prince-Boateng. So this guy was so talented. Maybe one of the best players I played with in the youth teams. But that's what I have to say. He's so talented. And I always said, this guy has to be like top five in the world.
Like what age are we talking?
15.
15. He was better than you, better than everybody.
Better than everybody.
And he's also big too, big and strong. So was he big and strong then? But also more technical?
Yeah, more technical. We talk about he can play every position, even as a striker or a number six, even I think goalkeeper. So, but what I'm talking about, he was so talented. you know, he had everything. Like, he can score with goals with the head. He was fast, technically. He did things like, even on the pitch, he danced, you know. But it's like more about mentality.
Yeah,
you have to stay true. Like, if everybody says, you are the best, you are the best, you are the best, and we can see it till now, you have to work. Even the young talents who are coming to the first team with 16, it's just the beginning.
The Euro under 21 that you won,
yeah,
with that incredible generation,
yeah.
Like, did you realize at the time how special that team was to have you and Neuer and Ozil and Hummels,
Boateng,
Jerome. But for you to have been so good at that age all together, and then obviously a few years later to go and win the World Cup with almost a similar kind of group, core of players, did you realize at 20 or 19, okay, this is a special team?
That's funny, because now we won the title, we won the under 21, but if you know the history, it's not that glory, because we played a really, really bad group stage. We won against Italy, against Balotelli in the semi-final, but they were even the much better team. And then we won England 4-1.
You speak of Balotelli in semi-finals. I think he got his revenge a few years later in 2012. Yeah,
yeah, but at the end, they were the second. So second. So what I said is, like, we had the circumstances was not that perfect, but we did it with a lot of mentality, also luck. Yeah, you can see, but you never think that we can win the World Cup 4 or 5 years later. But you had the feeling that there's a really special generation.
Yeah.
But also with Portugal had the golden generation. But at the end, you have to do it. You have to work hard and to fight for it, because even with talent, you cannot win any titles or any...
And again, we go back to mentality. It's the same, I guess, for a team than it is for an individual player, like you explained earlier.
But this was like, if you go now with this generation to the older generation, like we had Mertesacker, we had Schweinsteiger, Klose, Lahm.
Yeah.
So big players. And this fits perfect, because they were more experienced than us. But we had also this kind of mentality to get something bigger. So this combined perfect, because if you have an older generation, they're really good, but the younger are good, but no mentality, it doesn't fit, you cannot win.
Mm. One of my mysteries, that great German generation, and again, I say this with a lot of respect, so many great players in defense, in midfield, great goalkeeper. But in attack, apart from Miro Klose, who had to keep playing until he was 45 years old, the level, again, without offending anybody, wasn't the same as other areas of the pitch. And I'm curious, because now you're thinking like a coach, because you're doing coaching badges, yeah? So when we have situations like this, some people say, oh, it has to do with the way kids are developed, what clubs do, the opportunities they give, or maybe they turn strikers into number 10s or wingers. Other people, and this is my view, is that actually it's just random to some degree. And it is the luck of the draw that a great striker can be born, or maybe he's just not born for a period of 10, 15, 20 years. What's your view on that?
So first, I do my coach badges, but I think that I'm more like a director, or to have the whole view of the picture, you know? But I do my coach badges to understand coaches much better.
So that you can then fire them when you become a director.
Or to hire them. It's not that easy, you know, to plan a training session and to speak to young kids. It's also for me a big challenge. Because to play football, it doesn't mean that you can teach football. It's completely different. But I think especially in Germany, after Miro Klose and we had Gomez, we lost a bit the focus to create like this kind of striker who scored, because if you talk about football, it's about winning, and if you want to win, you need to score goals. So, and if you have nobody just to play like nice passes, dribbling and this kind of stuff, you maybe it looks nice. We talked about this before in England. It's nice to have a corner kick or nice dribbling, or how you say, like nutmeg or this kind of stuff. But at the end, if you lose, it's not that attractive. So you need striker who scores. And a few years ago, the German Federation realized that we have to build with strikers, you know, because we had it, but we don't push them. We said, no, he's too strong, he's too big, he's not that. looks not that nice, so we have to change. We need like younger, like smaller players who looks like more technical. No, yeah. Sometimes you need a striker. Mario Gomez, with all the respect, I love this guy, he's a friend of mine, but technically was not that good. But even Miro Klose, but they scored many of goals. Yeah.
But do we also get a little too fixated on positions? Because I have a friend, for example, who is convinced that if Lewandowski hadn't signed for Bayern, Thomas Müller would have been Bayern center forward all these years and scored a ton of goals.
He's an amazing player, yeah. But he's like more freedom. He likes to move yeah. on the pitch. He reads where is the space. So I think this combination Lewandowski
Müller pretty good. Is, yeah.
It's amazing. Like before with Klose and Müller, because he knows, okay, Lewandowski is on this position, so I go more on the right. He's going more on the left. So
is Müller one of the most intelligent players you've played with?
He is.
Really, in terms of football brains, like understanding everything, yeah. You know, like...
I think he cannot explain how it was, but he's... And also the guy who's talking that much. So now without the supporters, with the empty stadiums, you can hear everything. He is like 24 hours. So he has to drink a lot of water because otherwise he's
dry mouth. Getting
dry. Yeah, so... But always in a good way,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, of course.
And always Infinity, funny. So, yeah. But of course, one of the most intelligent players.
Okay, so Jules, it's 2010. We're in South Africa.
Yeah.
Sammy's flying, or was flying, because he just won the Bundesliga, beats up on England. They lose to Spain in the semifinal. You know, you're kind of down because you look around and you say, man, you know, will I get, this is my window of opportunity.
Completely.
And you can tell throughout, by the way, that Germany, the German national team, is so important to
Sammy.
Yeah,
to Sammy. Yeah, definitely.
And he gets a call. From his brother.
So I was so sad, and I was like in my room in the hotel, and I was like, maybe Spain is too big for us in this moment, and I was really disappointed. And then I got a message from my brother, Mourinho will call you. It's like, what? It's like, yeah, because he's looking for number 6. And the funny thing is that my younger brother Rani, who's playing now for Union Berlin, he told me, he was at this time like 15, 16, and he told me, oh, you have to perform because Mourinho is looking for number 6. And I was like, you don't know anything about football. You know Mourinho, you know Real Madrid. So why he's looking about Sami Khedira from Stuttgart?
You didn't think that a club like Real Madrid and Mourinho could come for you because you were still very young at the time. But...
Yeah, of course. So I have now this expectation. Mm. But then he's like, oh, he wants you. I said, like, okay, but he has to message me because my English was like so bad and I was so nervous. So he texted me and he said, like, yeah, you're an amazing player, amazing guy. I want that you join Real Madrid. So me and my agent, we flew to Madrid and the talks takes like 1 minute or 2 minutes. So he said, like, what's like your expectation? I was like, yeah, I want winning. And he said to me, like, okay, you are my guy. He gave me like a hug, a kiss, and I said, like, let's see in 2 weeks in Los Angeles for the preseason camp. That's it. And I said to my agent, okay, that's not a good sign. We came all the way to Madrid, you know, and after 1 minute, I have to go back. And it's like, no, it's perfect. We talk later. So, yeah, that's the beginning of the story. And for me, one of the best experiences in my life to meet this guy and even to work with him. So, he opened the door to the highest level of football.
Yeah.
But he has a different way of communication. I do remember my first training session. It was in Los Angeles, in the UCLA. And it was like, he told me, listen, my training session are 90 minutes, not longer and even not shorter, 90 minutes. And we're always using the ball. And I was like, easy. Because in Germany, you run without the ball. It's boring, you know? After the first 90 minutes, I was dead.
Really?
I was dead because we did like 10 against 10, 6 against 6, and it was no break. He always put the ball in. If he goes out the ball on the left, he put the ball on the right corner in. So you have to sprint back and defend the goal. And I was so tired, but happy because you have all the time the ball and not just running without the brain. So you have to run and to think about how to defend, how to move. So I was really exhausted. Come back to the bus, back to the hotel. And he was just like 2 rows in front of me. And then he texted me like, oh, you are an amazing player. So look at my lineup for the first game. And I was into the first 11. I was like, I was looking to him, and he was just like turn around and do like, and he gave me so much confidence because I was new in the squad, no friends, no English, no Spanish. So Mourinho told me like, it's like a puzzle, you know. So Madrid signed Kaká, Cristiano Ronaldo, Benzema the year before, but then he said like, he need players who are working hard. So he need maybe the genius like Ozil, he needs me, as a runner and taking care about the balance, Di Maria, even a young player, young, hungry, and yeah, that's the beginning of the story. It was unbelievable. Till now, if I think about it, I got like goosebumps, you know.
Viewed from the outside, that period, that Real Madrid, sort of 2010 to 2014, and from a media perspective, the rivalry with Barcelona and Mourinho against Pep, it's still one of the most extraordinary periods of time that that certainly I can remember in club football in terms of a two club rivalry.
Yeah.
The popular narrative viewed from the outside that it went too far. It took it to a level where the will to win, the intensity, it turned into almost like a hatred from on an individual level between players. Obviously, I really remember, you know, Pep, Mourinho said, puto amo, you know, when his head exploded.
And everything.
And then obviously it had repercussions internally on the team. How did you live that? Because you're still quite new. You're in this environment. You knew there was a big rivalry, of course.
Yeah.
But I mean, did you think, okay, it's like Dortmund against Schalke or whatever.
Yeah.
But then you get there and you see it's got many more levels. And it's a very, very personal thing.
To be honest, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. Because,
Even if you were not Spanish, you still enjoyed it a lot and you could feel it.
Yeah, because you know, it was like maybe Barcelona against Madrid, the players about Catalonia and Castellano. Mm. So it was then Mourinho against Pep. It was Messi against Cristiano.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the two fans like from Madrid and Barcelona, it was always like really special. Really special, and all the world was just looking for this game. And we had played in the La Liga, we played in Champions League, we played
five Clasicos in one season.
Exactly, like the
Copa del Rey,
the final, the first year that we won. So we went out in the Champions League against Barcelona, but we won the Copa del Rey. So it was always a big fight and something special. Maybe, as you said, it's too much on a personal level, but this pushed us, and maybe both teams, on a really high level. And I think this 2 or 3 years was the best game to watch.
Yeah.
The best game to watch. And even for supporters, maybe there are some personal reasons, but for the entertainment, for the quality of the game, it was maybe the best games I ever played.
They play the tiki-taka or the paperwork. So we can leave them the ball, but then we're going to make it really hard for them. And then once we get the ball, we're going to be quite efficient with Cristiano up front. Was that the approach that you had?
Absolutely. So we had our style of football and we cannot copy them. We cannot play tiki-taka. Mm. It was impossible.
Yeah.
But we knew that we have Ozil, we had Di Maria, we had Xabi Alonso, who can give a long ball to Cristiano. And also we had Pipa Higuain or Benzema. Mm. Not that bad as a striker, you know. So we knew that we had the quality in front, but we have to defend as a team. And of course, Messi. We have to control Messi. So sometimes we put Pepe on as a number 6 to control Messi. And it was a really big fight. So maybe not always fair, but always with respect.
Was that Barca team really amazing? In the sense of the way they were playing, like Xavi, Iniesta, Messi together, Busquets. They
of
were...
course. So even as a Madridista, I can say this team in 2010 was maybe like the best team I ever seen, you know. So of course I played in a really amazing team, but this team, and I said the best opponents I had is Xavi and Iniesta, and unfortunately they never won the golden ball. That's a shame. It's a shame, you know. But also Busquets, he never, with these three players, they never lost the ball.
But that's the thing.
That was the thing,
And you're in central midfield.
Yeah.
And it's your job to win the ball from these guys. I'm just imagining you're there and Mourinho says, okay, do the best you can, get the ball from these guys.
No.
And you're up against this freak trio of players. Like, what is
you
it?
You cannot get the ball, but then you have to find solutions. So
occupy
we are
space.
We are like, we need to anticipate. So if they pass the ball, just read the game and then you get the ball. And if you get the ball, they're not organized, because also Dani Alves or Eric Abidal, they are strikers. So if we get the ball, immediately we attack.
Yeah.
So and we did it. We just had like 10 or 12 Clásicos and we lost two. And all the others we draw, we won. So this was our tactics. You cannot get the ball from them, because otherwise, if you try to get the ball, you have to make a foul. Yeah. But also with Messi, you cannot get the ball. We have this same tactic with Germany against Argentina in 2010 and also in 2014. You cannot get the ball. You cannot attack him. Just follow him. And if he passes the ball, just follow him, because the ball who's coming back to him, you will get it. So that was our tactic. Otherwise, if you go to Messi, he dribble and you are lost. Yeah. So he's an advantage, because then he can play 2-1 or 3-2. So always stay behind the ball. So you have to be like really intelligent. And Mourinho or Jürgen Löw, they were really intelligent coaches. Otherwise, we never had the opportunity to win against Barcelona or Argentina.
It looked like from the outside that things got very poisonous in that third season. Obviously, Casillas getting dropped and Ramos. And even the local media that can be very cheerleadery in Madrid, when things are good, they turned on Mourinho very, very quickly.
Yeah.
I'm sure Mourinho has never asked you, hey, Sammy, could I have done something different? But if he did, what would you tell him?
At the end, it was, let's say, too much egos in the locker room. Too much egos. And if the ego is overcome the spirit of a team, you are lost. So, but maybe it's normal after really two intense years. We spoke about the Clásico. We spoke about winning the La Liga with the record of goals, with the record of points. So even Mourinho, we had the record of goals. With, I think, 121 goals or like that.
Easier to do when you have Cristiano, of course.
But at the end, you have to score. So that was really special. And I think the players got tired of it. And then in the third season, we went out of the Champions League against Dortmund. We are second or third in the league. And the people are tired of all this kind of leadership. So, and then sometimes it's better to break up. But what he can do, otherwise he has to change his character or change his leadership. And it's not that easy if you change Mourinho. So that's why he left and we got Ancelotti.
When you moved to Juve, it was in some ways a similar situation, because again, the narrative is Antonio Conte, 3 years, win.
Yeah.
But the players, by all accounts, were so happy when he was gone.
Yeah.
Is there a parallel there between the two?
Not just of them two, I think in general. So there's like a rule, let's say. You have 2-3 maximum 4 years, but I think 4 years it's done. You have 2-3 years where you can perform on a really high level. Otherwise, you have to change the coach or the manager, or you have to change the team, the players. Because you listen every day to the same voice, to the same speak, to the same training. You know, it's like, it's getting boring. So you need to change the players or you need to change the coach. It's like nothing personal, but it's like the truth. The past, like Ferguson or Arsene Wenger, something special.
You have to freshen up after a certain
time. You have to freshen up and you need to change the coach or the players.
And you talked a bit about the change. Is that what Real Madrid needed after Mourinho to help repair some of what happened before?
Yeah, so if you spoke about Carlo Ancelotti, he's that kind of coach. If you see him, like the images, like he's always like angry and, you know, grumpy. But if you speak to him, if you come in the locker room, he's one of the nicest person I ever met in football, you know. And most of the players were like happy that Mourinho left, because they have more space to breathe and, you know, like more creative maybe. And the locker room was like more quiet. And Ancelotti did it perfectly, you know. So he tried to bring his idea into the team, but the team was not ready for it. So he waited for it. And then step by step, he brought in his idea, but he listened to the players. And we had like really strong players like Cristiano, like Sergio Ramos, like Xabi Alonso. To play for Real Madrid, it's the biggest things that you can achieve as a football player. But it's also maybe the harder things, because you have one or two games, you are really good. or 10 games, you're really good. And the media and the supporters, they are like going crazy about you, but you have one or two games, you are struggling, you're not scoring, you're playing bad, and they are whistling to you and the media destroys you. So you have to stay really strong. And yeah, step by step this year, something special created. And also because the spirit, I think the spirit in the locker room, we felt that everybody has to stay together.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So it's inevitable, right? We live in the era of Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. And inevitably, when you talk to players about, even talking about themselves, if they were teammates of Messi or Cristiano, they will talk about them, what it was like to play with them. What I find fascinating is Sami Khedira got to experience two Cristiano Ronaldos or two different clubs.
Which is amazing.
Clubs, which is, I mean, it's extremely rare, right?
Yeah, very, very rare.
At Real Madrid, and then later at Juventus.
Yeah, one young at Real Madrid, just almost arriving from Manchester United the summer just before, and then much older, much more mature, much more experienced at Juventus. And I think even in Sami's words, just to hear the difference in approach, in personalities almost, is quite fascinating.
Something's changed, something's the same.
I met two Cristianos. So the first was in Real Madrid. He was a bit younger, maybe a bit more insecure and selfish, but not in a bad way, just like he has to find his personality, I think.
Yeah.
He scored many, many, many goals. He was fantastic, but he has not that influence into a team. And then he moved to Juventus, like my second period with Cristiano. He has the same spirit, the same selfish and ego that he would like to score, but he was more a leader, more a natural leader. So he always like spoke to his teammates, pushing for them. He was like, okay, I know if I would like to win the Scudetto or the Champions League, I need even more my teammates. So this one, what was the difference? Also Madrid, no misunderstanding. He was also a part of the team, 100%. But in Juventus, he was like a bit more older. How you say, like more
mature.
Mature. Yeah. So this was really, really nice to see. And then he got some kids. And, you know, this kind of feeling was like maybe sometimes more relaxed. But on the pitch, always focused. So I said to the guys of Juventus, Cristiano is special. Because everybody was like, oh, Cristiano's coming. Yeah, he's just he's a normal guy, be humble, but he's special. Take care of him. And on the locker room, he's really relaxed. But on the pitch, you will see the performance levels going higher.
Right.
And you can see it from the first day. So we had like shootings on goals, you know, and he was like winning. Okay, we bet on a bottle of wine. Or we're playing 4-4. He said like, Cristiano, what we bet? Bottle of wine, 100 euro, I don't know. So we bet. Because there was always like a competitive challenge.
Yeah,
yeah. So he's a competitor. So what we did when he lost, got pissed. But everybody's like, I would like to beat Cristiano, you know, or I would like to help you to win Cristiano.
Yeah.
So the level of performance getting higher, higher, higher. This is also Cristiano.
Yeah.
Because before we had a good level, but with Cristiano, the level is getting higher.
The perception, obviously, Juve make this huge investment, Cristiano Ronaldo. When you do that, you're saying, okay, we have to go and we have to win now, right?
Yeah.
So then I might sign more experienced, more expensive players to go and do that now because I have a window of opportunity.
Yeah.
with Cristiano. With hindsight, if you're going to do that, you probably don't want to also destabilize the team by changing the manager. And then obviously, Cristiano had three different managers when he was at Juve.
Yeah.
Looking back, is that, do you think that was part of the issue? Do you think that's something that maybe the club could have done differently?
You have to know, if you sign Cristiano, the profit is much higher, you know. Instagram numbers going higher, the sales of shirts getting higher, but the pressure also. And then you risk that you lose maybe your identity, especially a club like Juventus. So, and just to sign Cristiano maybe is not a bad sign, but all the circumstances that you sign different players, maybe it doesn't fit to the identity of Juventus. So, and I had a talk with Mourinho in 2016, I think. And I said, I love Juventus. And I asked him why. He said, like, because Juventus is one of the last clubs who have a really DNA, own identity. It's like defending character, like you see the lineback with Barzagli, Chiellini and Bonucci, Buffon in the back, like four Italian players, me in the midfield, and you have Marchisio, Pjanic, Matuidi, like working hard. And then some special players like Dybala.
Yeah.
So like in the past, Del Piero. Or so you have special players, but also working hard players. And then maybe the last 2-3 years, Juventus lost their identity. So you sign players who doesn't fit, who just maybe come just for money. And that's a big, big problem, you know. And then all the others who gave everything for this shirt, and I can see personally, I love this club and I give everything day by day for this shirt. They're in the same circle that, you don't give everything for the club. And then it's like a negative
spiral.
So, and that's happened then with Juventus. Just signing Cristiano, it's not the fault. Just like the upcoming signings, maybe it's a fault, because then you are not focused on your identity and what kind of football you want to play. And then you cannot change Juventus to the style of play of Pep Guardiola. Pep Guardiola is Pep Guardiola. It's fantastic, but you cannot copy it. Mm. So you have to stay on your own philosophy. And that's maybe the fault what Juventus did. If you have Cristiano or Messi or Neymar, most of the time you defend in 10, because they need some time to rest, and they are not defender. And now is a Ralf Rangnick, the German guy, I know him well. He's the coach of Manchester United, and he's a guy who has a really intense gegenpressing. Yeah. So it's like Klopp.
Yeah.
But with Cristiano, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's like, I'm honest, but you would like to win the game. So maybe you have to change a bit your idea and your style of football, like also Mourinho's changed a bit and Ancelotti changed a bit. Because, you know, if you give Cristiano the ball in the box or like in a position or cross, he will score. You know, I will fight for him. I will run for him. I will give everything for him, because at the end, he will score the goal. And he scored a winning goal. And we got the 3 points. And we win maybe the Champions League, or we'll win the league. So this is like a compromise that you have with Cristiano.
Well, it's interesting. You mentioned Rangnick there. We again had this image of him as sort of a football genius, but then he's also German, has a very defined style of play, not necessarily super flexible. But from what you're telling me, already he's arrived. He probably knew before he arrived. I can't ask Cristiano to do what Yusuf Poulsen does. I can't go and do the gegenpressing, the craziness, the 4-2-2-2 system. It's stupid. It doesn't help me. It doesn't help my team.
I think he has to do it a bit more, because he has his idea already in his head, and he is an amazing coach. You know, so we call him the professor.
Yeah.
So because he had the 4-4-2 at a bit like many years ago, and not just running behind the man, so just defend the space. So he's really special. But for me also, a great coach shows up that what kind of players he has, and then he adapts and change the system or change the tactics. So he has to know, if you have Cristiano or Messi, like you see Paris Saint-Germain, you cannot play gegenpressing with Paris Saint-Germain. But you have Messi, you have Neymar, and you have or Di Maria or Mbappé. So you have to change. So that's like Mourinho said to me, I was like a box-to-box player, for example. In Stuttgart, and also afterwards in Juventus, I was a box-to-box player and scored many goals. In Madrid, I scored like 5 years, 9 goals. So that's not that much. I had like 9 goals in the Serie A in one season. Yeah. But the difference was we had, as I said before, Cristiano, we had Ozil, we had Di Maria, and we had Benzema or Higuain. And we had on the left back the crazy Marcelo, who was like another defender. He's an attacking defender. So we had 5 players always in an attacking line. And then I changed my game because I have to be clever and to see, we have 5 attackers. I cannot go even in the last line because if we lose the ball, there's no one in the back, just the defending line and Xabi Alonso. So good luck. No, I have to stay back and have to be like the balance between the attacking and the defending line. So that's what Mourinho changed, even with me, but also with the team. And this is what Rangnick has to do with Manchester. Give Cristiano the space, give Cristiano the creativity that he can score goals and he can bring his quality into the team.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
We're back in November 2013, and Germany have this friendly against Italy to prepare for the World Cup in Brazil. They already qualify, of course, and Sammy starts the game. It's a really strong Germany team. And at some point in the game, I'm not really sure why, he goes in, loses the ball first, then goes in and you know, fouls Andrea Pirlo. And the problem is, on that foul, on that tackle, he tears his anterior cruciate ligament, and then he's out. He's out. He knows he's out for between 6 and 8 months. In a year where Real Madrid then reached the Champions League final and Germany hoping to do well in Brazil for the World Cup. And what's incredible is what happens next after that game.
The doctor told me, listen, we need to do 2 operations, like 2 surgeries. And it's like, how? Yeah, first we have to fix the ligament and after 2 months I have to fix the ACL. I said, like, listen, it's like 2 months plus 6 is 8. But I have just 7 months to the World Cup. No way. Yeah. So I said, like, no, I cannot go to risk. I take the risk. Do it together because you have to do it separate. So we did on one surgery and I said, like, no, I have to work hard. So then I researched my team. So I said to Real Madrid, listen, I have a trust in the German guys, in my guys, so I know them. And I found some other guys. So I had a therapist, I have the rehabilitation coach, I had a doctor, I had a visual coach. And I will ask them, do you believe that I can get into the World Cup? Do you really believe? And everybody's answering like, yeah, of course. So, and I asked a second question, like, can you bring the effort that you can see me the next 5 to 6 months more than your own family? So they said like, hey, you have to talk to my wife, but yes, we can do it. So the first 6, 8 weeks, it was crazy. So I had like 12 hours per day, like no sleeping, just eating, training, treatment. And because the doctors told me like the first 6 to 8 weeks are the most important.
Really?
So I did a lot of work and like, it was really hard. Like also my family, they didn't see me and all my friends. But I said like, I would like to come to the World Cup. I would go to the World Cup. So I need that time for me and for my rehabilitation. And then in April, I was back on the pitch and I felt like, okay, I can get it. Maybe not on the highest level. Yeah. And I said to Carlo, listen, if you can maybe give me 2 games before the World Cup. And I was not thinking about the Champions League final because after an ACL, everybody knows maybe that you cannot play in this high level from the beginning. And he said like, yeah, of course. But you have to play also Champions League final. And I was like, what? Because Xabi Alonso was suspended.
Yeah.
He got a 3rd yellow card against Bayern Munich in a semifinal. And I was like, Carlo, come on. I may be 67% of my level. And he said, like, I need you on the pitch. A week before the game, I had a shower after training and Cristiano came in and he said, like, Sammy, we need you. I said, Cristiano, maybe I'm 60 or 70% of my level now. I need more time. And there's no more time. And to play a Champions League final, I don't care. you're 70%, you are better than all the others, so we need you on the pitch, we need your personality. And then it was so special for me to get this confidence from Cristiano, from my teammates, from Carlo. So he spoke to me before the match, listen, just play easy balls, don't run that much, just keep positioning. And so for me it was special to be on the pitch. It was not my best performance, but I cannot accept it for myself because I had 3 weeks of training with the team, and I said I needed more time, but they gave me the confidence. I said, okay, I will give everything for the team, and I did the best what I can. But then on the 60 minute I was substituted. We always had like the feeling something is happening. It was not over, even we're like 92 minutes. Then we got the corner kick and I was like, no way, please. And we had Sergio Ramos, maybe the best player with the head to scoring goals, and it was so electric. The stadium was like heating, and our we got like, okay, now we get it. And we scored with Bale, we scored with Marcelo, and the penalty of Cristiano. So yeah, the rest is history. And when we came back to Madrid and the night, 4 a.m, Cibeles was like crazy. The sun goes up and we're like, oh, I'm so tired, but come on, we have to celebrate it with our fans. And I went home 7 or 8 a.m. after all the celebration. It was such an amazing day because I played, we won it, and we did something really, really, really special for the fans, for the club, and as you said, 12 years.
Yeah. You know, there's not many players who won the Champions League and the World Cup in the same summer. I think Caromba did it in 98.
Had to be a French guy, otherwise you wouldn't
know. No, I'm just saying, you know, it was not as good as Caromba. But what's even more special for you is that it could almost have not happened because of the ACL injury.
Yeah, I never thought that I would like to win the Champions League or I would like to win the World Cup. But I said, with this team, with this character and this coach, we have to win the World Cup. No European team won a World Cup in South America. No. But I said, like, no, 2010, we were close. 2012, we were close. There was just one Italian.
So you met Mr. Balotelli.
Exactly.
Yeah, put your hands high.
But then it's like, no, we are close. So it's our time.
And so you then, had the feeling or belief or both?
Both. That's why I said, like, I would like to go to this World Cup.
Yeah. You knew.
You have to go to this World Cup. And then it worth it because you played the Champions League final, you won it, you played the World Cup. For my upcoming career, it was maybe not the best, but we did it. We did something really special. And I'm so happy after this really difficult time that I get it into the World Cup.
And you've kind of dealt with this throughout your career. Obviously, you mentioned the ACL. You mentioned before when you were 17 and you got injured, you had the heart issue as well, the torn biceps. It's something players have to deal with psychologically. Is there a questioning that maybe you could have done something different?
Maybe when I was younger. That's why I try to help now younger people to develop them, but also to try to explain them that they have to work hard in a young age. Because I had just played football, but I had always many problems with the muscles and this kind of stuff. But you can solve these problems in a young age. To solve these problems at 28 is really difficult. So you have to start with a really young age, like let's say 10, 11, 12. Flexibility of the muscles, of course. And the ACL, if you do remember how it happens, I just tried to foul Pirlo because I was angry because I didn't get the foul before. So I didn't have my emotions under control, but it was by my own.
Yeah.
So my body was not ready for it. So you have to fix the hip, the ankles, and then the knee is fine. So I had 7 knee surgeries during my career.
Seven.
So that's a lot. But at the end, I'm happy that I played 15 years on the highest level in European football. But to avoid that, you can prepare yourself in a really young age. So that's maybe I have to do better if I'm born new and have the same chance. But now many, many young kids, and I always try to listen. I know I'm not a teacher and I'm not the expert and the guru, no, but I have the experience. So me with 17, I have 2 surgeries, so maybe I'm not get it, and I have to work in a normal company and not on a football pitch. I had the mentality, I had luck, I had many supporters that helped me, but many others of them, they're struggled and they're out because you don't have that time. And even with 17, if you have a long injury, you are out because a new is coming, a new player is coming. You have 100 of players who would like to have your place. So I had luck that I have a good childhood, a good parents, and that helped me a lot.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We have to talk about the World Cup. How you feel, how you felt back then. You said you came so close, 2010, in 2012 as well.
Yeah.
What was the difference that time? And also the 7-1, of course. Like, have you ever seen a more crazy game than that?
I was there and I thought of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief, looking at the faces of the fans.
Wow.
I mean, it hurt me.
Yeah.
And I'm not Brazilian.
Normally, if you speak about winning the World Cup, you speak about a final. But the difference in this World Cup is that everybody talks to me about the semifinal. It's maybe a historical game. I cannot find the right words, even in German, if this is like not English, not my first language, but even in German, I cannot find the right words. You go in, you know, we struggle in the last 16 against Algeria, extra time. We won against France, a really tough and hard, a good team of France, 1-0. So, but then we create a spirit. During this time in Brazil, we create a spirit. We have some egos, like, why are you playing that? And he's not playing. So the spirit of the team overcome the ego. And everybody steps back, myself as well.
Mm.
So it's like, I would like to play, of course. But if I'm not playing, I have to help the team. We had the best players on the pitch, in my opinion. So we had the best formation. And then we played against Brazil. I said, like, listen, again, semifinal. It was something. So they lost 2006, the semifinal against Italy. 2008, the final against Spain, the Euro. 2010, we lost against Spain. 2012, semifinal, we lost against Italy.
It's amazing. I'm just realizing.
So,
I was at all those games. And so were you.
And I was like, okay, 2014, again. So if you see, if you step up to 2016, we lost semifinal against France.
Yeah.
18, different story.
Let's not talk about it.
So, but let's go back to 2014, the happy end.
Yeah.
We're like always a bit nervous. So we play against Brazil. Okay, Neymar got injured, Thiago Silva suspended, but so like, okay, we have to do it. And
But when you prepare the game, for example, and you look at the video analysis that Gilov put together, did you think, okay, we can beat them? Or did you say, okay, this is going to be...
No, we can beat them, but you know, football is not just about tactic.
Yeah.
So you go there in the stadium, it's like 50,000, I think, Belo Horizonte, like 50,000 Brazilian crazy guys. They are singing the anthem, they are crying, like, it can be really hard. But we said, like, we are German, we can beat them. We do something special. But our tactic at the beginning was like, we start to defend, you know, where it's like the middle, how you say, like middle line? Like the,
yeah,
in the
medium,
middle.
Medium block, yeah.
Medium
block,
like the medium block. So we said, like, they can come, first minute, they give like a pass, like Fred, they have an opportunity to score. And you're like, So we try to start to defend. And then we got the corner kick. And now you can see how important corner kicks or set pieces are, because we didn't train. We just trained set pieces, you know, so Thomas Müller scored the first goal. And then we had this feeling, we are a bit more, I said, brave. It's like, okay, let's go a bit higher, like the first line of pressing. And then Thomas Müller told me, Sammy, the tactic, I don't care, we press. Okay, let's go. So the
really?
Defend line said to Boateng and Hummels, let's defend. And we're just looking at each other, go for it. And then we pressed them high. And we got the ball and we scored 2, 3, 4, 5. And then it was like, what happens? What happens? So you cannot explain. But the most important thing is in the locker room in the halftime. So we are like looking at each other and I don't know, we have to love, we have to celebrate, we have to stay.
Yeah, what do you do?
You didn't
after
know
that?
You didn't
know
what
that the most important was the coach. He said, like, listen, if one guy starts to blame them, or start to play, you know, with 50% of the performance, or like this kind of stuff. If you make jokes about the 5-0, you will substitute it immediately and you don't play the final. So take it seriously, take respect of the Brazilian team, but even more about the supporters and about the country. Because, listen, we had an amazing time here. It's not finished, but we have to respect the Brazilian country, the mentality, and all the people, and also the team. Because Brazil-Germany is on one level. Maybe 5 years later, 6 years later, we play again, and they beat us 5-0. Yeah. So it could be happen. So that's why we have to stay humble, respectful, and bring it in a good way to the end. So that's why the 7-1 happens like that.
I find that absolutely fascinating, and big respect to Lou for saying that, because I'm just so impressed that he did that, and you guys were able to finish the game, you know, in a respectful way, respecting them, not too easy, not too hard, in a way that avoided something bad happening, because I really felt something bad could happen.
Also, my parents, and especially my mom, she's really afraid about if many people's coming together. And then after halftime, she thought like, how we can go out of the stadium, because it's 5-0 and then at the end 7-1. But I think the how we handled the situation was really good. And that's why I love football, because, okay, you can teach tactic, you can teach winning, but you can teach also really important things in life. And that was one of the lessons what I learned the most, to stay humble, even if you are like, seems to be like God. You have to stay humble, and you have to respect always the opponents and always other human being. We loved to be in Brazil. It was one of the amazing 4 weeks or 5 weeks in my life, especially because then we won the final against Argentina. But you know how friendly and how open and how much love they gave to us, especially in our camp. It was just amazing to see, especially also after the 7-1, we came back to the camp and all the Brazilians are like, respect.
That first half was perfect, but for example, the 3 goals in 7 minutes, they happened so quickly. Did you even have time to enjoy it? Or it was just like, wow, what's going on? And then another one. Oh, wow, we celebrate. And then another one. Yeah.
No, you know, you're on the pitch and it looks and seems so easy. You know, it was like a training match, defense against offense, and always the defense have to give the ball to the offense and they have to score. So you cannot explain it. We knew that it's a semi-final of the World Cup.
Yeah.
That happens every 4 years.
Yeah.
So the next opportunity is just 4 years. So take it or leave it.
Yeah.
So, but then it was just happens.
After the semi-final and you go into the final and it's Messi and it's Argentina, do you feel like we can't lose now? You can't lose after beating Brazil 7-1 in Brazil? Or is still a feeling that the pressure is there because you've been so close before, and again, you could be even closer and still not win it, and also because it's Messi?
Yeah.
And in the end, it's not a really good game from Germany. You won it and Götze wins it for you, but it's not. Argentina have the best chances, and
the Higuain's finish as well, you played with.
Higuain, Messi.
Yeah.
So, Palacio. Yeah, we had also one header from over this.
Yeah, yeah, true.
The end of the first half. But yeah, of course, the dynamic of football is always like that. If you're winning 5-0, 7-1 or like that, the next game is even more harder than before. Like, for example, Bayern Munich lost against Mönchengladbach in the cup, 5-0.
Yeah.
The next game, the opponent, good luck, because this team will fight so hard. So this is really, you know, the dynamic of football is like that. And we are a bit afraid of it, because we knew we are a good team, but Argentina, they are so strong. You know, they had Messi, but then they had Di Maria, but was injured. They had Higuain, they had in the midfield with Mascherano. So they have a really, really strong team and good mentality.
Yeah.
And more experienced than 2010 when we beat them 4-1, I think, or 4-0. So we knew that it's a completely different squad and a completely different mentality on it. So, and as you said, they had the bigger opportunities to score. We didn't find our rhythm, but we are always like stay into the game. We never lost our focus.
Mm. And I guess Götze, in a way, he sums up well the mentality, because he was the unlikely winner goal scorer, and yeah, he comes on and becomes the hero, which shows the mentality that the whole squad had, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, he had a good start, and then he struggled a bit, but what he did is, for all of us, amazing. Yeah.
Gab, that was fascinating. Really, again, World Cup winner, Champions League winner, such a nice guy, very open, loads of stories. And I think he helps you understanding, you know, football's mindset, approach, insight that give you into relationship, injuries, performances, players that you play with, managers that you have. Really, really interesting.
So that's what we're trying to do, and of course, with these Gab and Jules Meets podcasts. We hope you find them interesting and entertaining. Check out the ones that we've already done that are up there with Jules's old pal, Gail Clichy, with Giovanni Bianchini, the first super agent, stories to tell galore, and with Victor Montagnani, of course, the president of CONCACAF, FIFA vice president. We've got plenty more to come. Mm-hmm.